Hey guys, Raphael here of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Did you say podcast? Dudettes! You're listening to the podcast on the Geekcast Radio Network. Cowabunga!
Hello and welcome to episode 202 of the Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me today is the Comic Concierge. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Excited to get into our final episode, or as far as the movies go, of our Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle retrospective, or however you want to call it. And this is the final movie that's currently released. It came out August 2nd of this year, so we're a little late getting to it, but that's my fault. I know, Dan, you were able to see this in the theater. I was not. So before we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of it and kind of set it up, just tell me a little bit about your theater experience seeing this one.
So took my kiddo to go see it back when it came out in August. I think it was the first weekend or maybe second weekend. Went to my local indie independent theater. It's like, so it's not part of like a chain or anything like that. But with that, like, they have like two normal size rooms, and the other ones are rather like, they're basically the size of a living room, a little bit bigger. So that's the room we were in. So it wasn't huge. It was, the screen was probably like maybe 85, 60. It wasn't, you know, huge, but it was nice. Just to, it was actually kind of more intimate in that way, in a weird, going to see it. So this, my youngest hasn't, like, he's watched a little turtle stuff here and there. Like, he knows who they are, but he watched some of the stuff when I was, obviously we talked about, like, as I've been going through this, but he really dug it. Like, I go and like, he was super excited the entire time. Like, we've gone to a few movies this year, like Mario and, what else did we go see? Spider-Man into this, or Across the Spider-Verse. I think he was the most excited out of all, like, this one for, I don't know why, maybe because it was just me and him, and his brother wasn't there, and he was just fully into it. But plus, it was, I think the humor, like, it hit him. It was definitely geared, I think, towards his age much more than I was anticipating. So I think it really hit strong. So he was a huge fan of it. So okay. Yeah, it was a good experience.
Well, we'll have to see what your opinion is. And my opinion of it is, as well, as we work our way through this, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem is a CGI or computer animated superhero film that was released this year, directed by Jeff Rowe, who's the same guy that did Mitchell versus the Machines. And it was co-wrote by Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, Dan Hernandez, and Benji Samit. I don't know if I said that name right, but we'll go with it. It's the seventh theatrical Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle films and a reboot of the Turtles series. It came in at about 100 minutes long. Budget was $70 million, made over $180 million. So far, obviously, this is a through Nickelodeon in a way. There's no series that this is based off of, like we've seen with some of the other movies we've covered. This is like the first part of whatever this may be, whether it's just this movie or we'll get into at the end what other things might be coming down the pipeline. And this obviously stars our four Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Donatello, Michelangelo, Leonardo, Raphael, as well as their dad figure, Splinter. And then we're also going to see some appearances by April O'Neil, a character named Cynthia Outram. And then we have a plethora of villain, quote unquote, characters. At least they were villains in the original series, so we'll call them that for now, even though they're not all like villain to the core. And we'll get into that because that's a whole kind of portion of this movie, but it features the likes of Rocksteady, Bebop, Leatherhead, Wingnut, Superfly, Mondo Gecko, Ray Filet, Genghis Frog, and Scumbug. I think I hit them all. And then we also had a brief appearance by Baxter Stockman. So, Dan, what was your kind of initial reaction to this film? What kind of things did you like or dislike, or kind of how did it just like first opinion of it after you saw it?
So I think going into it, I remember we mentioned it, like I was really looking forward to it because I really dug the animation style. A lot of people made the comparisons to like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and I think it's certainly there. Also, it just reminds me of like a claymation style. I don't know if you remember the almost even classic Nickelodeon and like the how it's a little rough around the edges, especially in the humor. But, you know, we've been going through this retrospective for a while now. And I want to say, like, out of all the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles films, I feel like this is definitely the most unique in the sense of how it's obviously animated, but it is the first one that feels like it, the teenagers part of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is actually kind of living up to that name. You know, it's definitely going very headfirst into that part of it, as well as the mutant, like, you know, mutant in this, like, teenage and mutant are capitalized, all caps. Ninja, maybe not so much. And then turtles, a good amount, I guess. But yeah, so I enjoyed my time there. I mean, obviously impacted because how much my kid was enjoying it. So that certainly rubbed off on me. Just seeing his enjoyment. But it was interesting. Like, I didn't love everything about it. Like, there were some choices where it's like, okay, this is going for something. But I think when you look at this entire franchise, one thing that has been very clear is that each installment has taken its own unique road to try to represent the turtles in some way, and some more successful than others. You know, right. Even from the earliest comic to the cartoon to the movies, they're all a little bit different. So I think it's stayed true to that. And I understand making some of the changes that they did. Like, there were some surprises in this. Like, I thought I knew right where it's going to go, going right away. Like, okay, here's Baxter Stockman. We know he's going to be the villain and all that. And it definitely surprised me on that end. But I enjoyed my time. I thought it was fun. In the sense of, like, on the character side, I thought it each character, or at least the characters, were engaging, they were fun together, and there's a lot of chemistry with those characters and those actors, which isn't the easiest thing to do when you're dealing with voice actors, and a lot of times everything kind of feels isolated. That wasn't the case here, so right. A lot to like. I don't know where I feel like it goes in the pantheon of all the different Turtles movies, but generally thought I enjoyed my time. It's certainly a movie I think I probably would have loved a lot more as a kid than I do as an adult. And I think that's kind of what it's going for.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. You mentioned, like, all the other different films that we've covered over this little journey, and it does seem like each one decides to take a certain approach to the Turtles, whether they're trying to lay into a little bit more of the darker side with the comics, whether they're trying to get a little bit more comedic, like the 1987-89 series. How much humor they're going to put in, how much action they're going to put in. It seems like they've all tried to, like, do various amounts of blending that to different effects. And it's interesting to see how they all kind of land and how this one lands in comparison to some of the other ones. Just to get into the visuals a little bit, because I think that's one thing that just is going to, like, define this movie in a way, is, and what a lot of people talk about when they talk about this film, is the visuals. And I think, you know, it's interesting. It made me think when you were talking about the fact that you brought your son to it. And I'm thinking in my head, like, kids these days, like your son, for example, is going to grow up in a world where, seemingly in a world where there's so many different styles of animation that they're exposed to, that there's not necessarily, like, one style that's going to define their childhood, maybe, as there was with us, is what I'm thinking. Like, because we had, like, the 2D animation, you know, cells that were painted, etc. You know, like, we have what was done in the 80s, and that was, like, the only thing that existed, right? And, you know, then Disney took kind of a lead in how animated films looked. And that was all we basically got, outside of, like you said, some of the stop motion, you know, Wallace and Gromit type things of that nature. But we, for the most part in our childhood, were exposed to the same general animation type. And then I feel like in maybe the next generation was more just straight CG. Now, granted, there's various levels of CG, and some are better than others, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel like maybe for the first time, kids that are, you know, maybe 4 to 8 or 9 right now are dealing with, or are living in, a world where it's not just one form. It's not just CG. It's not just what we grew up with. There's all these different styles being shown and highlighted, thanks to things like Into the Spider-Verse, thanks to things like this Mutant Mayhem film. And, you know, I'm sure there's others that are out there. I don't have children, so I haven't been exposed to as many of them, but I just feel like it's an interesting time where they're getting just such a variety of different styles to look at, that I don't know if they would think one image in their head when they think animation, like maybe we do, if that made any sense.
No, I definitely agree. You think of those movies like Secret of the Kells and things like that, like the, like those, that type of style. Although that's, you know, a little bit more like the shade. I don't know what they call it. My animation knowledge isn't that great, but certainly I think Into the Spider-Verse opened the door, because you're right. Like, it was basically Pixar, the look of Pixar, and even like DreamWorks, like How to Train Your Dragon. If you knew nothing about that movie, like, I don't think people would be like, is this Pixar? Is this DreamWorks? Right. Like, the stylistically, you really saw no difference depending upon the company. And this certainly, you know, and I think there's a lot of comparisons into the Spider-Verse with, like, how, like, in, but it's all obviously rooted in comics. But even this, I think, takes it a different direction. It's a little rougher. Like, it's it feels incomplete and like, kind of purposely ugly. Like, it's, like, not meant to be all shiny and nice. And I think that's what they mentioned going for, like the sketches on notebooks of teenagers and stuff like that. And I think it's certainly in that vein for sure. So
it was interesting because it said, like, for Into the Spider-Verse and that, those movies, that it was kind of like trying to make a comic book come to life in animation form. And for this one, the director said that it's more like he wanted a sketch to come to life.
Yeah. And
he made the comment that if the picture looks like a 2D painting when it's not moving, we're doing what I want. We're doing well. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah, it's very much this unfinished look. And where you see like the brush strokes, or you see like the things that aren't, you know, smoothed over and things of that nature, which is makes it very unique. Something that I don't know if I've seen something that's done exactly this way ever. So I thought that was fun. Would it be like the style that I would choose if I could only watch one style of animation for the rest of my life? I don't know. But it's unique, and I thought it was fun to look at as far as that goes. I think the other thing that I want to talk about before we get into the characters and before we get into the story a little, some of the kind of more aesthetic type things about this. So one, you have unique visual. Number two, with the sound and the songs and the soundtrack and the all that type of stuff, I found it interesting how diverse that was as well. Like, they do some stuff that's more current. They definitely make their callbacks to stuff that has happened prior in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle universe. So, like, we got Ninja Rap, you know, Vanilla Ice's Ninja Rap in here, which is awesome, I thought. But then you have stuff like Blackstreet's No Diggity. You got some DMX in there. You got some stuff that would not be as well known. So the score was composed by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. What did you think of the music just in general?
I love some of the music choices. Like, I'm like, I don't know if kids are gonna like, when No Diggity came out, I'm like, really, this is where they're going? All right, like, I'm enjoying it. And I also think they weren't obvious choices too. Like, I don't think before this I would ever think No Diggity would ever be the, you know, the soundtrack to an action scene, because it's not that type of song. But it makes sense with this, especially what it was going for. So I thought the music choices were smart and had a good variety to them. I was trying to think of what I was recently. I forget. I think it was one of the Fast and Furious movies. I don't even remember. But it was one of those movies where it's like everything. It felt like everything was so obvious. It's like the lyrics were basically, of the songs were just basically describing what's on screen. And here I thought it wasn't that. And they weren't songs you hear all the time. And they weren't the obvious, oh, I know what it was. It was Transformers, the most recent one. And like, it went with like the most, you know, always the big hits of the 90s and things, rather than like some of the, it's not like No Diggity is like not a huge song, but it's not one you hear all the time. So I felt the choices were effective and varied. And I don't know, like I said, if it really keeps in line with trying to go with the youth, but you know, what is old is cool sometimes. So who knows?
Right. Speaking of the youth, couldn't help but notice how much effort was put, it seemed like intentional effort to try to make this connect with things that are of the now, ways that people speak in that, you know, in the younger generations, things of that nature. And I'm kind of torn on that. Part of me is like, I get it, because they're trying to connect to a different audience. They're trying to make this cool for this new generation of kids, et cetera, et cetera. So they want to relate to them. And then on the other hand, it's like, I've seen when this happens in other films, and then when you rewatch it 5 or 10 years later, it makes it feel so dated. So I'm kind of torn on if I like the way they went with that or not. And what things I'm talking about is like, they reference celebrities, and I think Guy Fieri is mentioned, and like a couple other things like that. But then they're using like language that kids use these days. Like there's a whole conversation about sus and things like that. How do you feel as far as like their kind of their effort to connect with that younger audience? And do you feel any of it is going to make it feel dated, you know, later on more so than like if they would have avoided that?
I think it'll definitely make it feel dated, but I don't think always being dated is not necessarily I don't think being dated is always a bad thing. Cause I think we go back, you know, watching those 90s, you know, the first 90s TMNT movie, it definitely feels dated because, but they make some older references. They make some references of the time as well. But I think it's in keeping with the characters, cause these are characters who their understanding of the world is through pop cultures, through YouTube videos and things like that. So that's what they know. And some of them, I think, aren't super, like, Guy Fieri has been around for a while. It's not, like, specifically right here, right now, or Attack on Titan. That's been around for a long time, too. So it's not like it's just, you know, a reference to, like, a viral video from 2022 or something like that. So I think, in the sense, they're not, it's not too niche or not too of the moment. So I feel like if you're going to do it, especially because they casted kids that were talking, if it was like adults trying to say that, if it was Corey Feldman trying to talk about sus, I'd be like, it doesn't work. But it here just felt naturally of the kids that were in these roles.
Yeah, I totally get that. And it's interesting because they did that, all of those like efforts to really sound like kids, talk like kids, et cetera, et cetera. But then they also are throwing all the stuff for the parents that are watching it with their kids. Like we talked about No Diggity. That's clearly something that the parents would get. The Vanilla Ice song is something that, you know, parents would get. They have a whole thing with Ferris Bueller and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And
yeah.
That was very timely, very funny, because I know that's been brought up a lot, like how wrong that movie seems in retrospect, like from a lot of people, as far as when you're dissecting, like what's actually going on here. Like, so it was kind of interesting that they chose to kind of have a little commentary on that, but that's clearly something that the parents are going to get. So it's like, they were pulling in multiple directions to try to appeal to as massive a, you know, an audience as they could, which is obviously what you want to do. So I think they did that well. Did you notice anything else that was kind of pulling towards different ages?
I don't know if it's different ages, but I think if you're a Jackie Chan fan, they certainly made references to a lot of his films. Like they literally showed them. And then there was like a few scenes with Splinter that like he was legitimately like acting out like a Jackie Chan moment. So for people who are fans of that era of martial arts films, you know, I guess you would say, you know, he did movies forever, but I think that was something I did notice, was they tried to they had Jackie Chan as a voice, and they took advantage of it and tried to make some references to some of his classic stuff.
And I feel like another way that they're doing that and kind of playing to both crowds in a way is how they cast this film, because obviously they do have somewhat unknowns as far as the main turtles go, and they're, you know, actually casting kids to do the voice roles of that, with Micah Abbey, Shamon Brown, Nicholas Cantu, and Brady Noon, and even Io Edebiri as April O'Neil. But then you have like these like well-established people when it comes to especially the villains, with Maya Rudolph, John Cena, Seth Rogen, Rose Byrne, Giancarlo Esposito, Jackie Chan, Ice Cube, Paul Rudd, etc., etc. So you have like this big mixture of that, which I thought was interesting as well. And then I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, the fact that they recorded this, it used to be, you know, way back in the day when cartoons were done, you know, the whole voice cast was in a studio together recording in a booth and playing off of each other and talking to each other and stuff like that. And then as technology has happened and different things in our culture and society, like it's gotten to the point where a lot of people are recording those isolated individually, sending it in from way across the country or across the globe or whatever, and then they're all getting mashed together. You mentioned that it didn't feel like that here, and they did make a concerted effort to have multiple people in booths together recording. So like the four turtles were always recording together. It talks about how some of the villains that shared a lot of scenes would be recording together. So I assume that you feel like that was apparent and came through in some of the performances as well, that it seemed like they actually had people that they were playing off of.
Definitely. Like there's that one scene where it's like one of the first scenes there were with April, and they're like trying to like do videos of themselves, and like they just go off for a rather long time about like they start doing impersonations of like, you know, New Yorkers and things. Like I think it was even in the trailer. And like, I don't feel like you could script that. Like you could start, but it definitely felt like a scene that naturally evolved into something that, you know, it started at some place and went someplace else.
Right.
So those moments, I don't think you could get isolated. I think you need to have them together for a moment like that. So,
yeah,
for sure.
The performances were well done there. And I think another thing that's interesting about this film that separates it a little bit from a lot of the films that we've talked about before is the choice of quote-unquote villain or villains. Because a lot of times you get either Shredder, or we've seen it where you get Krang, or you're getting this like main character. And we've seen, you know, Bebop and Rocksteady a little bit, or Token Razor, those types of characters. But I thought it was interesting that this one really kind of took some of those like second tier or even like third or fourth tier characters that you might have had the toy of, or you might have seen in one episode of the cartoon that never got any attention in any type of film or anything like that. And they just start throwing like the whole group of them in here. So what did you think of the idea, or the fact that they did put, you know, whatever it ended up being, it's like 8 or 9 of these characters in as this group that the turtles are going to interact with, whether they're fully bad or fully good or somewhere in the middle. But we get all of these classic characters that appeared in at least the original cartoon. I don't know if they appeared in the comics as well. I'm not as versed on that, except for I'm not sure. Is Superfly a character that was just made for this film? That's my guess, but I don't know that for sure.
I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know, because obviously that we had the Baxter Stockman character, which I feel like it's influenced by, but I don't know for sure. I believe it is made up for the film, because I believe it's, you know, they named it after the classic Blaxploitation movie. So
right. So we get all of the other ones though that we know, like I mentioned before. So was there any of those that, first, what did you think of just having that many characters involved? Does it work, or does it make it a little bit too muddled? And was there anybody that you were like excited to see that was like, oh, I remember this character that hasn't ever got this type of attention?
My knowledge of like some of those characters, I wasn't huge. Like the Gecko guy, I can't think of his name with it. That one I remember having that, like, I don't think I had the toy of, but I remember seeing the toy of. I was just happy that we were seeing a bunch of them that we like, that we didn't normally get. It wasn't just a Shredder movie again. Right. So that was kind of cool. And usually having this many characters is like the kiss of death. Like once you have, you know, the villain problem, once you have, and with that, I mean, it's not like they had there was any development with the characters, but I think what we saw was, it wasn't necessarily in, it was what those characters represented as a group rather than what they meant individually. I don't know. Like it was interesting.
I thought it worked way better than it should have.
Yeah. And Superfly was like, I kept waiting for Baxter Stockman. I'm like, that was my thought. Like, oh, is he really dead? Like, I had that. Like, so that was a kind of surprise. And villain, I thought Superfly was effective. Like, he felt like a menacing threat in the way it evolved. So, yeah, I don't know. I like the way they went with it. I think it was interesting just seeing all these characters on screen. And even though like they didn't have a lot of development, at least had personality, and part of that was the voices and the actors that were there. But I don't know, I thought it was fun.
I gotta admit that I completely geeked out at Scumbug, only because Scumbug was like this random toy that I had as a kid that I don't even remember ever seeing like in anything. Like it was like that time where your parents get you like the toy from the series that you're watching, but then you're like, who the heck is this? Like, where did you find this knockoff turtle character? It like this, he doesn't exist. This is weird. Like he was just made as a toy, but I had that toy and I've forgotten completely that he even existed. And then he popped up in this movie and I was like, I had that toy. So I liked that they found a way to get him in there. I don't know if I think the only thing that kind of gets a little muddled is with the whole Cynthia Outram aspect of it as well.
Yeah,
but I know that's something that's kind of a through line through a lot of the turtle stuff, so I'm fine with it. But like, I almost would have rather that not even been a part of it. But I get that she had to deal with the whole Baxter Stockman aspect that kind of sets that up, and we get the whole. Go ahead.
I have a feeling that she's like, there's that set up for the sequel. Like, you know,
right.
The Outram, like that's, you know, maybe secretly there's a Krang type of alien controlling her, because even she had that kind of look with the glasses. So I was waiting for that reveal. So I definitely think there's more to that one. So they did hold the door open a little bit for like some of those more classic characters. So, but yeah,
of course they still have the the TCRI or whatever acronym or sets of tools that we have that's going to supply the ooze or the mutation stuff that's going to cause the turtles. But we do get a little bit of a different backstory with this one as far as the Baxter Stockman involvement, as far as the Splinter backstory and things of that nature. Not that there's been just one of those, there's been multiple, but kind of how do you feel like that all worked with this movie?
So that's the one element I don't know if I'm fully sure on. So when we did the Michael Bay movies, obviously we had the Splinter who learned how to do martial arts through a book. And here it was like through, you know, movies and things like that. And I don't know if that's any better. Like, it just seems, it seems strange to me. I guess it's something you just kind of, I can't get hung up on, but I don't love that choice. I do kind of like the idea of him being a recluse in the sense of he doesn't want, like, he's almost, you know, he's that overprotective father in a way he's not normally. Like, he, you know, obviously he's usually the sensei, the sensible one. Here, he's the one kind of causing a lot of the conflict, which is different, but I think it's, like I said, sometimes we've seen this franchise works by being different, and Splinter is the one character that has always kind of been steadfast in the way they've approached him, so why not do something a little unique? And so I thought that was an interesting approach. Like, I still don't love the idea of him learning, becoming a martial arts master through those means, but I guess it's no less realistic than a rat learning how to do martial arts through watching his master. So I don't know. I guess it's you can't, you know, it's neither of them make sense logically, but I guess, you know, it makes more sense logically the other way since we're used to it, I guess. But,
right. Well, I think I think it makes the character lose one aspect that I kind of enjoy about it, and I always have enjoyed about it. Like, I don't mind the idea that he doesn't trust humans and that he is very cautious of the turtles interacting with them and that he's been done wrong by them, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I think that's fine. I think it adds to a lot of different elements that this movie does play around with that is very, very similar to what we see with a lot of the X-Men films. A lot of the same types of concepts that they're tackling when they do that. I think the one thing that I miss, though, when they change this backstory, which we've seen it in multiple movies now, is it just, for me, takes away a little bit of the mystique or the kind of the lore of ninjas and the lore of that aspect of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, it, 'cause when you tap into that, you know, it's this whole storied history of how these people train and how they act and their codes of, you know, different things of that, like we get to see with a lot of the different training montages that we see with some of the other movies. So I kind of like wish they would have been able to still somewhat tap into that, but then still he could still be this recluse, he could still be kind of like, you know, that type of thing, which I don't think we've gotten that version of Splinter yet that kind of is able to blend both. They either go all one way or they go all the other way, it seems like. And the look of him is obviously a little crazy for me because it's just not what I'm used to. So that,
I guess after the Michael Bay movie, I'm happy with anything. Like, it still looks better than that, in my opinion. But
what do you think looks that they did with the turtles as well? You can finish that thought as well, but then kind of go into, like, obviously they're going to represent the turtles in a little bit more of a younger look, a little bit more, not necessarily geeky, but more like adolescent.
Yeah, well, I guess this is the last thing on Splinter. I do wonder if we'll, like, learn maybe that when they, if they do bring Shredder for the sequel or the TV series, if they can continue it, like, maybe there is more to his story than he's letting on or something like that.
True.
It's always a possibility. But I like the look of the turtles. I think it was a good way of, they're different, like, in sizes. Like, Mikey's a little smaller, and we've seen that a little bit more consistently, I think, really honestly, since the Bay movies, they seem to. Yeah. So I thought it was a good meshing of, like, everything. Like, they had, you know, starting off, like, you know, the opening scene, they're designed to look like the original comics, and then they kind of go into their more modern look. But I thought the look was good. Like, it wasn't over the top with how they differentiated them, like the Bay films. I keep saying Bay films, but he's not even the director of that movie, but you know what I mean. They're at least had their own personality and design. So, you know, Donnie with the glasses and, you know, the braces, which makes you wonder who do they go to for dentistry? But, you know, maybe that's another thing that Splinter learned through a YouTube video. Who knows? But I like the look overall for the most part.
How about April O'Neil? and like the student at the high school and kind of.
I like that. I actually really like her being a teenager too. Mm-hmm. I think that makes a whole lot more sense, you know, like especially if they were to do like adult April with these kids, I think it'd be a little creepy, honestly, especially if they had like the attraction to April that they always tend to do. Like if those kids, you know, when they're like 12 years old and she's like in a full adult, it wouldn't work. But right. I liked it, and I felt like this is the first time she had a story, like her own, like development throughout any of these. Usually she's just there. Here, right. like, she had a story, she had a purpose. You know, she helped the turtles in a way that, she, like, obviously getting them what they want. So I thought, out of all the movies we got so far, I thought this was the best April in the sense of, like, she's the most complete character out of any of the films, easily.
It's almost like they subtly worked in like her, the April O'Neil backstory, the origin story into this film,
yeah.
in a way, which was kind of interesting. I maybe wasn't a huge fan of the whole vomiting on camera fireworks
thing. Oh, my kid loved it. My kid loved it. So, yeah.
So. But it is what it is. So overall, I kind of, with the feel of the movie in general, I think I like what they did with the blend of the music. I like what they did with some of the nods to different generations of people that are possibly watching this. I think the action works for me for some of it. It was like they were one step away from making it look like the side-scrolling video game that was so popular, Turtles in Time or whatever it was called. And I wish they would have gone even that much further to make it look more like that. I think that, I don't know if that was the no diggity scene or not, but it was one of those scenes where they were kind of almost doing a side scroll, which I kind of enjoyed. I think they did do a decent job of inserting some of the humor that we're used to with a lot of the Turtles, properties that we've seen. They obviously didn't go too serious with anything, but I think for me that's one thing that, granted, it wasn't like it was on speed like one of the other films that we watched. I don't know if that's the last one or the one before that where it was just like the
last one,
non-stop movement. Like they didn't go that far, but they also to me could have maybe benefited from a scene here or there that just kind of slowed things down, that gave us a little bit of depth into some of these characters and some of these relationships, which I think was the one element for me that was missing in this film. Like I wanted to, I guess I relate it too much to the original live action film, like that farm sequence when it's like, okay, we're going to bring things down. We're going to show you the bonds and the relationships between some of these characters, what they're going through in their heads. And it just really made me like, buy into those characters and be attached to those characters so much when that movie came out. And I just think that this could have maybe benefited from a little element of that.
Yeah, I could see that. Like, I think it does partially, part of that is because I think it hangs on to the comedy so much that even when they had, it doesn't necessarily have that moment of like high stakes, even when things go really crazy at the end, it always undercuts it a little bit with humor. Like even like the milking scene, you know, like that could have been like a movie, that scene that was like, it should have, it in theory is like, that's really like, that's, you know, crazy. Like, you know, when you think of what's really happening there, but it became, but it ended up being more comedic than I think it was designed to be, or maybe it was supposed to be, I'm not sure, but I do think that is the one thing, because you don't get a moment like that. Like we get, Splinter and April and Leonardo, I feel like, have a lot of development within this. Like, certainly there are films. The other Turtles, I think they're a little bit more just there. Like, they get some moments here and there. Like, Donnie, like, has some, he is a different version of a nerd. Like, he's in the anime and things like that, which is, I think, a good way of approaching that character. But Mikey, I felt like it was a bit shortchanged. Like, I don't feel like there was a really moment where I felt he stood out. Raphael the same way. They talked about how he gets mad all the time, but I don't know if it was really ever represented in the film. So because of that, I do think the Turtles, on a strictly character standpoint, I don't, outside of Leonardo, they were kind of just filling that role. But knowing that they have, you know, series coming up, it just does feel like something that they're planning for next time, where they're like, let's focus on Leo, let's focus on Splinter, and we'll focus on April as like our main characters. So you have to cut some time someplace. So I get it. It just, it would have helped just to,
right.
There's at least like a scene or two where you felt like Mikey and Raph were those characters we know, but I don't feel like we ever got that with them.
Right. it was obviously received well, made its money back and more. Rotten Tomatoes, 96% general overall positive reviews. Most of it is because of the style, the look, the animation, and things of that nature. As far as like people's quotes and reviews, seems like it goes into that a lot. So I think overall people liked it. Like you've mentioned a few times, it is definitely something that they are discussing doing more stuff, whether it be a sequel film or a series or both. It seems like we're going to get both. It seems like most of that has been greenlit, and we'll see just if it actually comes to fruition. So are you excited to see more from this specific version of the Turtles universe? I know they're talking about the sequel film would be all about Shredder as far as the villain goes. Who knows what, I mean, obviously the series would take multiple different routes and probably introduce a whole lot of different people, but is this a good step for this franchise? And do you think it's in good hands as far as the future goes?
I definitely think it's in good hands. I think I know it made a good amount of money. It wasn't like a huge hit, but referencing back to like Into the Spider-Verse, like Into the Spider-Verse wasn't just ginormous hit, like its first time out either. So, and considering the positive buzz, it's on streaming, although it's on Paramount Plus and like four people have that. So, I don't know if like it's gonna like have the increase that film does, but I think they've laid the groundwork for a lot of cool things. I do wonder though, like how great the animation is gonna look like on a TV. Like this seems like it was rather expensive, and I know it was like $70 million, but like to try to make this look as good as it does on a TV show, I don't know, because like that might be a little bit more difficult. So I wonder if something is gonna be lost in the translation. But still, I like the universe it's building. It doesn't feel like it's like doing everything that was done before. Like there's a lot of like new directions. It's kind of like reminds me of the 2003 series, which was so very different than, and like it you could see like where it was referencing what came before, but it was making its own stamp on the franchise. And I think that's definitely the case here.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what else they do. I'd be down to see like their take on Shredder and some of that stuff. Yeah. I don't see him all the time, but I'd be interested to see kind of how they do it. We've seen it done a few different ways, and to see if they further develop those individual turtles in their relationships as well. You had a thought?
Yeah. It's like, imagine how gross Krang's going to be, like considering like how, like, you know, they go full gross with this. So I can imagine like,
That was the thing that was interesting was that they definitely didn't pull any punches as far as like, I know, you know, back in the early times when we were talking about films, like there was films that they couldn't actually use their weapons, and there was things that they couldn't do from a violent standpoint, and it seems like that is all good to go now. Like they're using all kinds of different weapons, guns, whatever it might be, and there's no problem.
So, I get, you know, that is interesting. I guess maybe since it's animated they're less and that might be it. Or that is funny, because they did, like, they had no issue with anything they were doing. There's a good amount of like, not like super violence, but it's a decent amount, like compared
to... Yeah, it's not quite as much as the one of the other films we looked at, and I know I keep
failing. Like TMNT or whatever that was, yeah, right?
It was like real, like, I don't know if my kid can watch this. It wasn't that level, but it was definitely a little bit more than what we've seen in some of the other films as well. I had a question for you, too. Were you at all thrown off at the... It was almost like the introductory sequence or whatever, where the turtles are all stealing stuff from the convenience stores and from trucks... And from all kind, like they are stealing all of that stuff, correct?
Yeah. That was odd. Like that's when you kind of knew you're something different, because it's like they're like doing bad things right away. Like that's something they should be stopping, but right. I guess, you know, it.
I don't know if that was to like aid in the whole like humans versus mutant type thing.
I think it was. I think it was to show that they don't like consider themselves outcasts. So this is what they see like, as a necessity. So it was, you know, you were waiting for them to put that dollar in the on the counter or something like that, but it never happened. So
and it was interesting too. Obviously, we end the film with the turtles are bringing most of the mutants that kind of aided them in the end down to the lair with Splinter, and I think Splinter strikes up a love connection with one of them, and we have the turtles that are being in school with April with a different look, trying to look a little less turtly, I guess, and whatnot, going to, I think, I don't know if there was prom involved or if they just showed them at their lockers. I can't quite remember. But what did you think of kind of how some of those things ended as kind of some final thoughts on this film?
Well, I don't know if you want to touch the controversy behind Splinter, but I know people thought they turned him gay because they thought the bug character was a guy, but it's not. It's actually a female character, so people can stop freaking out that a mutant Rats is dating a female mutant stink bug because that makes it more natural, I guess. Like, I don't know. It seems such a strange thing to get upset about, but whatever. I said, that you're talking about, like, seeing where it's going. Like, that's something different. We've never seen the turtles in high school before. It's like, if you told me that concept, I think it'd be awful. But after watching the movie, I'm actually kind of for it. So, you know.
So I'm looking for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle version of Ferris Bueller's Day Off then. Like,
there you go. Yeah.
Let's, like, go full circle with this. But yeah, I think it's a good overall film. I thought it was fun. I think it's like you said, your son loved it, and I think it probably works for a lot of people that it's aimed for in that generation. And I think there's enough for us old folks that can enjoy it to at least varying degrees as well, regardless of if you're a Turtles fan or not. So
yeah.
Any closing thoughts that you didn't get to talk about as far as Mutant Mayhem?
No, like I said, I liked it. I think, as a kid, I probably would have loved it a lot more, but it was, I'm really looking forward to see what they kind of continue with this. I hope they get a shot at another film, because I think there's something really, really cool here if they can continue moving forward with it.
Absolutely, I agree. And I hope that this is also in, obviously Spider-Verse is the big one that's made all of the impact, but I hope this helps in just creating people that are willing to take the risk and do stuff that doesn't look like Pixar or doesn't look like Disney or doesn't look like something we had before. I'm all for, like, just a variety of different things. Give people all kinds of stuff that they can look at with that all look different, so they can pick what they like, pick what they don't like. And I think that's also aided by our movement to so many different streaming platforms that are willing to do some of those things as well.
For sure. I mean, I wonder if this, you know, when it comes to animated Oscars, if this will be up there. I don't know if it's, I haven't watched a lot of the other animated films this year, like Elemental and things like that. So it's
on Rotten Tomatoes, so maybe it'll get some love, but it's hard. Sometimes franchise stuff like this gets just, like, pushed to the side regardless.
Yeah, and I think people will probably see it as, like, oh, it's just, you know, not be an admiration of the animation as much as they were as into the Spider-Verse, because they'll be like, oh, it just did that. But I think the comparison's there, but I think it's also very different stylistically. Yeah. Like, so
I think it's definitely, like, true. I think the one definitely looks like a comic book on screen, and I think this one definitely looks like a sketch. Like, and I think there's a vast difference in those two types of looks, at least in my opinion.
I'm also kind of surprised that, like, it would work with kids, because, you know, but in a way I think that's kind of, it makes sense, because kids do kind of like things that are messy and strange and unique, and I think it,
it's probably easier to relate to them too, like something they could see themselves drawing or a friend drawing. Versus, like, something done by a computer.
Yeah, there's a lot of energy in it, like, you know, and I think that's something certainly people look for. Everything, so, like, especially even with, like, you know, stuff people do on YouTube, like, it's always so clean. It's interesting to see something like that is so very not.
Right, I agree. And obviously the toys are all out on the shelves and things of that nature. I don't know how they're selling, but it's interesting to see all those as well. And also ushered in a retro look at all the classic toys coming out in, like, a reissue form of certain things too, so that's kind of fun. And they're actually not that expensive. You can get, like, all four of the original Turtles that look like the original Turtles, and I think they're, like, $9 a piece or something. So that's not
that's too bad. Wow, that's super cheap, because, like, every other toy, it's like $20 an action figure. So
absolutely. I was surprised at how cheap they were. So that does it for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. That is the last one that we're covering for this, because it's the last one, you know, these other films haven't come out yet. So that does it for this retrospective, but we are going to probably come back and do, like, a wrap up where we kind of highlight some things overall of the Turtle franchise in general, give some awards out, or maybe rankings of the films and our favorite this, that, and the other. So be on the lookout for that. In the meantime, Dan, is there anything that you want to promote, or how can people look and find more of your stuff?
The best place to go is, for me, Comic Concierge on TikTok. I know, like, New York Comic Con was the weekend we're recording this, so a lot of news on comics. I did a bunch of videos on that, so I have a playlist on there you can check out. So if you want to keep up with all the things that are happening, best place to find me is there, or Instagram, Facebook as well. Just search Comic Concierge.
Absolutely. If you want to look for more of my stuff, you can search out the Geek Showcase, although there's nothing new currently on there, but I should be getting back into that. And then be on the lookout also for the Geekcast Radio Network here before the end of the year. We'll probably be releasing our top 100 toy countdown list. I'm hoping that that will be something that we're able to get to sometime over the holiday season. The lists have all been submitted. The tallies have all been made. So now it's just getting everything ready and coordinated with records and things of that nature. So look out for that from the Geekcast Radio Network as well. All right. That does it for this episode of the Cinema Geeks. Tune in next time for another chance to listen to more.